This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. As the Special Investigator General for Iraq Reconstruction, Stuart Bowen has been uncovering waste, fraud, and corruption. His office audits how private contractors in Iraq are using money from America's Iraq Relief and Reconstruction Fund, the IRRF, or IRF. Bowen has just released his 12th quarterly report. The Iraq Relief and Reconstruction Fund's initial $21 billion budget is all under contract, and the fund's phase of reconstruction is coming to an end. But as part of President Bush's plan to stabilize Iraq, he's asking Congress to approve $1.2 billion in new reconstruction aid. We asked Bowen to talk with us about his latest findings. Stuart Bowen, welcome back to Fresh Air. What would you say the headline of the new report is?
The headline of this, our 12th quarterly report, is the end of the Iraq Relief and Reconstruction Fund in the beginning of the next phase. The Iraq Relief and Reconstruction Fund, or the IRF as it's called, was appropriated by Congress in 2003 for the recovery of Iraq, post-war Iraq. Amounting to $21 billion, it is now all under contract and over 80% is spent.
So what does that mean? Why is that the headline?
What that means is the largely U.S.-supported phase of the recovery of Iraq is coming to a close. The next phase must include a larger multilateral component, and ultimately it must transition rapidly to Iraqi control and Iraqi funding.
So our money is basically spent on reconstruction projects.
That's right. The money that Congress had appropriated for this program is basically spent.
Now, Iran, the ambassador from Iran to Baghdad recently said that Iran is prepared to offer Iraq training for its security forces, as well as equipment and advisors, and Iran is also ready to help with reconstruction. What can you tell us about the role that Iran plans to play in Iraq's reconstruction now that American money is coming to an end?
Well, we don't obviously have a role in reviewing issues like that, but what I can say is that support for Iraq must be multilateralized. And the International Compact for Iraq, which includes the Gulf states, the EU, and other nations, will, we expect, realize the hope of Madrid. In 2003, non-U.S. Pledges amounted to over $13 billion, but just over three have come in to date. That must change this year for Iraq to move into the next phase of its recovery.
I know it's not your position to decide what's paradoxical, but do you find it a little paradoxical that as the United States' relationship with Iran continues to deteriorate, Iran seems to be forging an alliance with Iraq?
Well, Iraq is now a sovereign nation, and its government can make and pursue whatever relationships it chooses. But what's more important is that the world community move off of the sidelines and into the reconstruction game, the recovery game in Iraq, to bring this country forward and so that it can prosper.
One of the things I certainly take away from your report is that it's very difficult to do reconstruction work when there's so much fighting and sabotage. For example, electricity. Your report says that Baghdad is getting an average of 6.5 hours a day of electric power because of attacks on power lines that feed the capital and other political issues that inhibit the transfer of power from large plants in different regions of Iraq. Can you talk a little bit about how sectarian divisions and the insurgency is affecting power and other projects like that in Iraq now?
Yes, infrastructure security is a serious issue and has been for over a year now. It's an item that we identified in our spring 2006 report as requiring attention, and later last year, $325 million was appropriated to bolster the strategic infrastructure battalions that are needed to protect those power lines. But they have a long way to go. Obviously, the attacks by the insurgents continue to hinder everything in Iraq, but especially the provision of basic services. Electricity, most notably in Baghdad. Indeed, the Minister of Electricity told us last quarter that he has a difficult time getting his repair teams out to address the interdictions by the insurgents, because those repair teams themselves come under fire.
Now, your report says that more than 5,100 schools have been rehabilitated or constructed, and 6,800 secondary school teachers have been trained since 2006. But there have been problems with violence there, too. What are some of the problems with violence that are undermining the accomplishments of the schools that have been built and the teachers that have been trained?
Well, it's very difficult in Baghdad to do anything, including go to school. In fact, one of my interpreters was attending Baghdad University, and she told me that the Sunni students, when they come to school, have to come with bodyguards because of the danger, and moreover, that school had been reduced to 2 days a week because of the number of attacks and uprisings that had occurred around the university.
Can you give us an overview of the amount of money we've spent on projects that have been destroyed by sabotage or by the insurgency?
Well, it's a very small percentage of projects that have been lost, that we've constructed, that have been lost to the insurgency. Certainly many have been descoped or curtailed because of it. There have been instances where certainly there was a police station in Al Hilla that we constructed that got blown up and then we rebuilt it. But that is the exception rather than the rule with respect to U.S. projects. Indeed, my inspectors have visited over 90 projects in Iraq over the last 2 years and have found about three quarters of them have met contract specifications.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Stuart Bowen. He's the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction, and his office looks into corruption, and other abuse in Iraq Reconstruction projects. And the office has just issued its 12th report. The issue of accountability comes up here, and I'm going to give you an example of what I mean. There were two whistleblowers who worked for Custer Battles. And Custer Battles was a contractor in Iraq. And the whistleblowers sued the company for fraud under the False Claims Act. Custer Battles had provided security at the Baghdad airport and other U.S. installations. Now, a jury found that Custer Battles committed 37 separate acts of fraud and submitted $3 million in false claims for security arrangements in Iraq. The jury decided that there should be a $10 million penalty against Custer Battles. But then the ruling was overturned by a U.S. District Court judge who ruled that the Coalition Provisional Authority wasn't really a U.S. entity, and therefore the False Claims Act didn't apply to it. Would you explain that ruling a little bit?
Well, I think it's an unfortunate ruling because it has some grave implications. That is, those out there who may have committed fraud in connection with CPA will likely raise the same argument if they are prosecuted civilly or criminally under U.S. law. So I don't agree with that decision, and it, as I said, could present problems down the road.
So according to this judge, any contractor who was hired by the Coalition Provisional Authority would not be subject to U.S. laws because the CPA isn't a U.S. entity?
According to this judge, however, the CPA was constituted by order of the CENTCOM commander, and the administrator of the CPA was appointed pursuant to order of the President of the United States. Therefore, it has all the indicia of a U.S. entity. It was governed by U.S. law, wherein CPA internally, I should say, and CPA developed its own laws, which largely mirror U.S. law with respect to managing the interim Iraqi government.
So I think that this case is being appealed. Do you think it stands a chance of winning on appeal?
I do think it does. I think that the facts belie the decision by the judge.
So although a judge overturned the jury's verdict in the Custer Battles case, there is a case of corruption that has come to the courts in which the person was found guilty. And this was, a case that the decision came down this week. The person in question is Robert Stein. I want you to describe who Robert Stein is and what he was convicted of.
Robert Stein was the comptroller for the South Central region of the Coalition Provisional Authority. So he was in charge of $120 million in reconstruction funds, Iraqi money, that was allocated by CPA to that region for rapid reconstruction programs. He entered into a conspiracy, engaged in a conspiracy with Phil Bloom. Philip Bloom, a contractor who's also been convicted, who also will be going to prison, to essentially defraud the government of millions of dollars. And they had also in concert in this scheme, this conspiracy, were several military officers, including Lieutenant Colonel Bruce Hopfengartner, who's also been convicted and will be going to prison. Several other individuals cases are still pending, so I don't want to talk about those details, but it evolved from a hotline complaint. A citizen anonymously reported potential wrongdoing in Hilla, which is in South Central Iraq, and I deployed two auditors down there to investigate it. They returned with grim stories about potential wrongdoing, so I sent two investigators down, and thus began a long and detailed investigation in concert with other investigative agencies that fleshed out the facts of this fraud. It's the largest case that we have uncovered to date, but we have 80 other cases ongoing. 23 of them are at the Department of Justice under prosecution, and we should see progress in a number of those over the next quarter.
This is a really interesting case. I mean, you've got a private contractor, a lieutenant colonel in the Army Reserves, and a member of the Coalition Provisional Authority working together in this fraud and corruption scheme. Like, what were their interactions?
Well, Robert Stein had the duty to approve payment on the contracts to Philip Bloom, and Colonel Hopfengartner worked with Stein in the contracting office, and essentially they agreed to pay Bloom for work that he never performed, or just to transfer money to him on contracts that really didn't exist, and as a result, Bloom recovered millions of dollars and paid them off in bribes.
What was the contractor actually supposed to be doing?
There were a whole series of projects. There was the repair and reconstruction of the Babylon Police Academy, the repair and reconstruction equipping of the Karbala Library, as well as other facilities, barracks facilities down there. There was almost no work done on the Karbala Library, nor was any decent work done on the Babylon Police Academy. It was all deficient.
So, yes. So what kind of precedent? We have two separate precedents here. We have this trial where one of the people is found guilty, and then we have the precedent of the Custer Battles trial where the charges don't stick because they're overturned by a judge who says the Coalition Provisional Authority isn't a U.S. entity and is therefore not accountable to U.S. law. So what's the difference between these two trials and their perceptions of the Coalition Provisional Authority?
The difference between Custer Battles and the Bloom Stein case is that the Custer Battles case was a civil action, whereas the Bloom Stein case were criminal actions. And indeed, we accumulated so much evidence against Bloom and Stein that they agreed to plead guilty. They never had to go to trial. And that was true also for Hopfengartner. Other cases, however, are pending prosecution, and we'll have to see how they turn out.
My guest is Stuart Bowen, Special Investigator General for Iraq Reconstruction. He's just issued his 12th quarterly report. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Stuart Bowen, the Special Investigator General for Iraq Reconstruction. He's just issued his 12th quarterly report investigating fraud, waste, and security problems. Well, you say in your paper that you think that there needs to be a kind of single authority coordinating all of this, and there isn't right now.
Well, the president just appointed a new reconstruction coordinator for Iraq, and I think that squarely addresses the problem we identify. Mm-hmm. And that the issue is when you have multiple agencies operating in a war zone trying to carry out a relief and reconstruction operation, you have jurisdictional lines bumping into one another. Someone who can cross those lines and coordinate those agencies with authority would make a huge difference in promoting efficiency in the program.
Do you have an estimate of how much money the United States has spent on projects that were never completed, or money that and money that we've lost to fraud and corruption?
We don't have a number on those two issues yet to provide. We've been directed by the Congress to perform a forensic audit of the Iraq Relief and Reconstruction Fund over the next year and a half. And that's a very detailed, thorough review of every contract, looking at where every dollar went. And upon completion of that audit, we will be able to, with confidence, give you a number on it.
Do you have any guess about whether we're saving or losing money by investing so much in private contractors as opposed to having the military do the work?
Well, the military is doing a significant amount of work through overseeing the Commander's Emergency Response Program. $2.5 billion has been spent in that program to date, and it involves sort of military contracting officers engaging in direct contracts with local contractors. It has the salutary effect of quick turnaround, rapid effect that addresses local problems and puts local citizens to work. The shift has also moved to from design build to direct contracting in Iraq. That is, we've moved away from using the very large contractors and are really fully engaged in employing Iraqis and Iraqi firms in the reconstruction program.
When did we do that?
That evolution began about 18 months ago. Virtually 90% of all new direct contracts have been going to Iraqi firms for the last 9 months, 9 to 12 months.
Would you sum up for us what President Bush's latest plans for reconstruction are in Iraq?
Yes, they emphasize building capacity through the provincial reconstruction teams, both at the governance level and through reconstruction, by executing rapid reconstruction programs that employ as many Iraqis as possible. Unemployment is a serious problem, especially in Baghdad, and Baghdad is the target of these economic initiatives. Along with the PRT program is the Commander's Emergency Response Program. That's also aimed at employing Iraqis, engaging Iraqi firms, and trying to kickstart the Iraqi economy to get some attract some capital investment.
Do you think we should have done more of that early on?
I think it's wise to do it now. I think the SERP was something that began in the summer of 2003, and it grew sort of on its own as commanders recognized the need for rapid reconstruction projects in the villages and towns they encountered. Because of the successes experienced in 2003, it expanded greatly and continues to prove a good vehicle for investing U.S. dollars in Iraq.
You have a whole list of lessons learned. What's the most important one as far as you're concerned?
To ensure aggressive oversight from the beginning of any relief and reconstruction program after a contingency operation. I think that the lack of any effective oversight in Iraq from June 2003 till March of 2004 permitted people like Blumenstein to take advantage of what was an increasingly chaotic situation.
Well, I spoke with Paul Bremer when his book was published, and Bremer had been the head of the Coalition Provisional Authority. And he said, in terms of like paperwork, paper trails for the money that he was spending, he said he gave out a lot of money without paperwork because you had to work in a real hurry. You know, there was a war going on. And in order to really get people to respond, you had to deliver quickly. And that, you know, in a war, in a chaotic situation like that, accounting isn't going to be as careful as it is in an office, you know, in New York or Chicago.
Well, I agree it's not going to be as careful in an office in New York and Chicago. However, it needed to be more than the standards that were met by the CPA. There needed to be some accountability mechanism in place, some reporting of how the money that was being transferred to the interim Iraqi ministries was being used. And there wasn't. There was just a ledger that showed how much had been budgeted and how much had been delivered. There was no meaningful feedback on what happened to that money after it was delivered to the Iraqi ministries, and it was delivered in cash.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us, and have a safe trip.
Thank you, Terry.
Stuart Bowen is the Special Investigator General for Iraq Reconstruction. He's just issued his 12th quarterly report. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.